This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 709. Let's go to the Nerds Community Cork Board, shall we? First of all, well, I guess I'm in the Nerds Community Cork Board. I am performing in Florida, Orlando, and Tampa on the 7th and 8th of August, and then the following week in Sacramento and San Jose. So go to funcomfortabletour.com to get tickets and info for that business. And also from you, the listening audience, Adam Poole writes, we're hosting a one-day independent comics festival on Sunday, August 2nd in Portland, Oregon. It's called Artist Alley Comics Fest and can be found at artistalleyfest.com. We have over 50 artists exhibiting and admission is free. And the Nerd School Level 1 Sketch Clap is open for registration. Whether you've always envisioned hilarious scenarios but never written them down, or maybe you just have experience writing comedy and you want a refresher course. Our instructor will give you the tools to turn your ideas into amazing sketches, and then you can go make your thing. That's the thing I'm bitching at you all the time about. Then you could just go do it. I mean, it's not like you don't need us, but you could just go make your thing, but we can help give you more tools to maybe better hone your skills in a faster way. But if you want to sign up for that, go to nerdistschool.com. Make your thing, goddammit. Man, that should be on our poster. Nerdist School, make your thing, goddammit. You know, UCBS don't think. We can just be make your thing, goddammit. This episode of the podcast is Will Wheaton. One of my oldest and dearest friends in the world. We have a very public and private bromance. It's not like the private bromance has areas that we wouldn't talk about publicly. It's just not everything we do is recorded and put out into the world. I sure wish it were, though. I love that guy so much. He's one of my favorite people in the world. And really, kind of one of the crew. He's really part of the... He's always there in spirit. You know, Jonah, Matt, Katie, Kyle, Will. Like, he is part... This is almost a hostful, to be honest with you. This is all... I kind of consider it a hostful. He's promoting Tabletop from Geek & Sundry and his podcast Radio Free Burrito. Also, he's at Gen Con this weekend and has a panel this Saturday for Titan's Grave. So check him out and all of his various artistic expressions and panels and signings and whatnot. Whatnot, Will Wheaton. Here is the Nerdist Podcast number 709 with Will Wheaton. I don't even know what number of time it is that he's been on, but it doesn't matter because it ain't gonna stop. Katie, roll it.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I found that out on the way in. The security guy was like, "So, I bet I know what you're here for." And I'm like, "Really?" And he goes, "Yeah, RuPaul." "No, Nerdist." "Oh, well, you're wearing the shirt." And I told Jonah that I had that like recovering punk rocker horrible nightmare awfulness of, "Oh my God, I'm wearing the band's T-shirt to the concert." And as I'm walking across the lot to get here, I'm like, they're all judging me.
No,
everyone's judging me.
You better work it.
Me.
Cover Girl.
Well, that's the thing is I can't not turn left. I can't not
turn to the right.
That's as far as I go.
Sachet.
Sachet.
Chante. Oh,
Chante.
Yeah. We're trying to get a Drag Race panel for at midnight.
That would be insane.
I know. Just try to get RuPaul.
So you get RuPaul, Jeffrey Tambor.
Felicity Huffman.
I mean, that would be an incredible panel. But I will be more than happy to have...
like the people from the shows.
Drag Race,
yeah. Panel. That would be really funny.
So,
working on it.
Oh, and the ghost of Jonathan Winters.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's tasteful.
We could just have the ghost of Jonathan Winters drive on as Ma Fricket.
What are you doing here?
Have we met before? Perhaps in a slightly with a moderately different voice and a different hat on.
I don't know. I'm this person,
the many varied character of Jonathan Winters.
How dare you? The man's a comedy legend.
I know.
How fucking dare you? How dare you, sir? How dare you? How dare you?
How dare I?
Oh, that the U-Rock video is really funny.
It's great.
It's I feel bad because when Will was recording a thing for one of his many social causes that he takes up.
I'm a social justice warrior. You might not know that about me. I am a self-hating white man.
You know, everyone talks about white privilege. They don't talk about the weight of white guilt. Am I right, guys?
Yeah, so, really. I'm fat with it. I'm more of a social justice ensign.
Are you really?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you come to my social justice academy, I can probably train you through the various levels. The first thing is you accept that women are people.
Yep.
Then
slow down, hippie.
Hang on. And then
hippie is the most accepting of.
then you realize that video games are not the most important thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And that probably just sort of like, you know, being in favor of equality for people is a good idea.
Yeah.
It is a 14-month process.
It takes 14 months to
get
through it?
Yeah, just to get through those two steps.
Most of the steps are denial.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah. Well, also...
Okay.
It's also helping people get through that... It's also like helping people get through junior high school graduation.
Nah. Okay.
There should be a rule. There should be like a driver's license situation for internet commenting where it's like you can't do it until you're 21. I think that should be a law.
You need a license to hunt. You need a license. Hell, you need a license to drive. You need a license to fish. But they'll let any ass-reaming dirtbag be a dad.
But you know what they never quote is the best scene in all of Parenthood, which is where he crashes the car because he's getting a blowjob.
Right.
Oh,
a
I thought you
said,
did I win? He gets pulled out of the wreck.
I mean, it's basically the same moment.
And he's like, and he's super like, he's just super easygoing, and his wife's crying. He's like, it's fine. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
You know, as far, it's like, you know, it's in that pantheon of blowjob car wrecks, one of the, on the sadder scale.
Isn't that a David Lynch movie?
Yeah. Crash. No. That was Cronenberg.
Cronenberg.
But I was talking about Garp.
Oh,
the
yes.
Car.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Ooh, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Wow, that is... I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
That is tough.
Will Wheaton, Social Justice Academy.
That's right.
Would you like to be more accepting of those around you? I know it sounds rough, but do it!
And are you accepting applications?
Oh, yeah.
How much?
It's
got to be a scam.
But before we get distracted, we did this thing for Project You Are Okay, which is actually a really neat thing. It's a video for I recorded a video about just talking about depression and anxiety. And Jenny Jaffe started it. And the whole idea is to create these videos of people who like kind of deal with the weird brain shit that people like me and Mara Wilson and a bunch of our friends deal with. And then we make videos about it, just talking about it. And the thing that I wanted to talk about was like – it's not the end of the world to have these weird mental health things, and like we shouldn't be ashamed of them. We shouldn't be embarrassed about them. We should really just be like talking about it and knowing that we're not alone. That was like the whole thesis of my thing. So I'm recording it upstairs at the studio, and as I pulled into park, I saw that Chris's. Have you seen Chris's really? Have you seen his rich guy car?
It's not important.
Have you seen his expensive rich guy car?
It's not important.
It's just a car.
Have you seen it?
It's it's not important.
It's
just a car.
It's. I mean, it's more than just a car. It's really. When Chris's car was parked in front of my house, I felt compelled to go set up cones around it so no one would go there.
I tried to get him to get a leaf. And then the Nissan people tweeted at me saying, yes, Chris should get a leaf. I was like, I'm the one who told it. You should give me a leaf.
Yeah, that's how
it
works.
And then they sent me a tiny miniature toy version of a leaf.
Aww.
Saying, we're sorry, we're only the social media people, but this is all we can get.
What kind of mileage does it get?
It gets as much emissions as the regular leaf. Yeah.
So it's like
blower, yo.
Like, yeah, dog.
Yo.
Yeah, nah, this guy's the king.
Yeah.
Yeah, real expensive car.
Yeah, so
we all have that. These mental issues that you speak of. If anyone's listening to this podcast, they probably have those.
I'm leaving for Gen Con tomorrow, and my anxiety is just like, hey, what's going on? Let's have some talks about some stuff.
Missed
you. Then you should go to Gen X Con. That's the case.
Going to the Gen X Con just has like 30 doors, and it's everybody standing outside, and they can't decide which one to go through.
Edwin Wood by Alice in Chains is playing over.
I'm on the optional paralysis track for Gen X Con. Just can't decide which one to go through. So I went there to record the video, and I saw Chris's really lovely luxury automobile in the parking lot.
It's a nice car.
And so I was like, I need to see Chris before I leave. And so I told everyone at Nerdist, because Nerdist and Geek & Sundry, you know, we share offices.
Yeah.
We love each other. Like
we're popped.
And Smart Girls at the park.
Yeah.
And Smart Girls. We're cohabitants.
I haven't officially met anyone from Smart Girls yet. So when I walk past Smart Girls on my way to Geek & Sundry, it's always that weird kind of like, half odd smile thing that you do that
kind
of like, you know, that like, I want to know you, but I don't want to introduce myself because that's weird.
Yeah.
Hi. Is Amy in there?
Yeah.
I want to say hi to Amy too.
And anyway, so Chris came up while we were recording, and I'm in the middle of this like really intense thing, and Chris shows up, and it's basically just like, well, it's time for a bunch of fart jokes.
Yeah. Look, I brought this Star Wars cereal.
It was great, but I watched it.
They sent me Star Wars cereal too.
Packaged? Like, yeah. Still sealed?
Yeah.
Are you
going to eat it?
That was the whole thing.
And which one do you eat? One box has Yoda, the other has Darth. Like, do you keep the dark side?
Man, what happens if you mix them together?
No!
Dark side wins.
Yeah, but midichlorians have a lot of calories.
I don't know if you saw, so I put it on Twitter because we were talking about what do we do, and Seth Green was like, you guys, you eat the cereal, then you put some foam in it to refill the package, and you seal it up in plastic and put it on a shelf. You're all set.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, if anyone knows, it's Seth.
He's probably done that.
The guy who has the best collection of
everything.
Everything.
Like, have you been to his game room with the action figures in it?
No, but I've heard it's amazing.
So he has a game with action figures in it, right? And it's like everything. It's G.I. Joe and Star Wars and Mask and He-Man. Like, it's everything, right? But what he did was he put little magnets on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then put them all on these metal shelves so you can stand them up without the foot pegs. They're just magnetically attached there.
He also mods action figures, so he just makes – I mean, it's – like.
So he puts them in like no, diorama
mods,
style?
Like
or?
He makes – he'll mod things together.
Oh, I thought you meant he put them on scooters and races them around Leeds.
Yeah, Vespas. He puts them on Vespas.
That was a deep pull.
With the soundtrack to Absolute Beginners.
11 people in the audience are like, that was,
yep.
That wasn't three layers. That was four layers of Quadrophenia.
So he does that, and the man knows his stuff. Like, he really knows stuff. Like, Robot Chicken is the perfect show for that guy.
Oh yeah, of course.
So much an expression of everything that he's into.
If you ever get to go to Stupid Buddy and go upstairs to where they keep all the stuff that they've used, they save everything. It's basically like every dumb thing we did as kids playing with action figures can be recreated up there. Like, it's so nice. Freaking amazing. It's well, so great.
They don't use actual action figures, right? They like they remake because they have to be able.
They
to,
remake
like,
them and then they put this like they put this really heavy gauge wire in them so they move around. We shot a thing over there for a Will Wheaton project, and Seth took us through the whole thing, like through where they make their molds and then how they build them together, and then the ones that they use. And he's showing us because they have to be able to move in these teeny little increments and then hold that pose for like weeks or months, depending on the complexity of what they're shooting.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So he was like walking us through the whole thing. It's really great.
That's maddening.
It's really really cool.
Stop motion. I can't imagine how maddening that must be for people.
Well, I was watching the every once in a while I go watch that that Muto video where the guy basically animates on the side of the buildings, and so
he has these
giant paint rollers. Yeah. And so he'll white out a building. And then draw a figure and like paint a figure like it with a massive and then white out that and then draw the next frame and white out that.
But it's not just on a building; it's down the side of a building, on a sidewalk.
The camera moves are the most like crazy part about that video.
That's amazing.
Is that because clearly days are going by and they still like have the same fucking frame?
Just go back and still I think.
I don't know that song.
Muto.
Muto.
Dirty Muto.
Dirty Muto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where,
which is also a sex move that's still illegal in South Carolina.
You're not supposed to do it. They're on the books. They won't arrest you for it, but technically they can.
Yeah, that's right.
But
that's
I think they're coming around now.
Yeah.
First the flag thing.
Coming around is how you finish the Dirty Muto. You stop motion animate writing your name across the wall with your own jizz under a black light.
It takes a long time.
Because,
you know, you only
Sting is the only person in the world who can actually do it.
That's why you got that nickname.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's actually not true. He got a nickname because he used to dress up like a bee when he was a kid. That's what I heard.
He wore the yellow striped sweater.
Like a bee.
Yeah, so everyone called him Sting.
Like a bee.
But I don't think it was when he was a kid. I think it was just when he was in bands. That's just what he wore.
Like a bee.
So was he in the Bugaloos?
Mm-hmm. He was in the Bugaloos. Sting was in the Bugaloos.
He was Billy Barty in the Bugaloos?
He was Billy Barty, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then he became a bee.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
And
Did you punch the wall or something?
What? No. I have the dumbest blister on my knuckle for the stupidest reason.
It's not how you jerk off, Chris.
No.
You're doing it wrong.
No, you're doing it wrong.
Are you sure?
No.
I've mastered the Dirty Muto.
That's where I jerk off one frame at a time on buildings.
Yeah, of course you do.
I had a brand new pair of jeans, and they were very stiff.
I thought you were saying, I had a brand new pair of driving gloves.
I thought it was going to be gloves. I totally thought it was going to be gloves. The way you held up your hands.
It's not about the car.
I'm sure it was going to be gloves.
Just like, because it's like, I was like thinking, what else could a pair for your hands be?
And you know how hard that is, because to get the skin off the gray whale.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. It's really
It's only good if they do it while it's still alive.
And if they don't get it in the right spot, you got to throw out the whale.
You got to throw out the whale. Just put it on a beach. It'll explode.
They blow up on themselves.
Yeah. Someday we're going to figure out how to make more than one pair of gloves out of a whale, and that's going to revolutionize the industry.
No. All right, future man.
Yeah. Then the commoners will be wearing whale gloves. Who wants that?
Oh, that's
What's
true.
The point?
We must continue suppressing the research.
As long as I have that in my eagle yoga pants.
Yeah.
But these jeans were really the pockets were really stiff, and so every time I would reach into my pocket, it would scrape my knuckle a little bit, and then finally by the end of the night, it just wore the skin.
That Rod Denham friend.
That Rod Denham. That's Rod. That's more of that.
Did you know that they actually make jeans now that are soft? Yeah.
Yeah, he modeled them in the 90s.
You son of a bitch. How dare you. I was in Montreal this weekend for the Just for Laughs Festival. So I had some
new jeans
for my television set.
Do you do that too? I'll get an outfit. I'll go and get a new outfit for a TV appearance. And I love it.
Yeah.
I used to feel like I could only wear something once if I wore it on TV. And then I realized that was like wasteful. And also I never wanted to like burn a great shirt on TV because then I couldn't wear it all the time, and I just embraced that I have like 13 shirts and I just wear them over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of okay with it.
I wear jeans once and I throw them into the whale. Really?
Yeah, throw them into the whale.
How is whale grist ambergris like a really good, like does it clean it? Because I use it mostly as a fabric softener.
No, it's you can get into a tough spot, but you can baleen out of it.
No. Bravo. Well, we've breached the puns.
Jonas. Nah.
Really? Nobody? Nah. Nobody?
Breach
no
opinion.
One in this
breach
room. Not a single
yes,
person.
Breach.
We fuck a whale. It's a whale
all of you.
Pun.
Fuck you all.
No, you're going to kill Kyle with that pun.
Good.
Are you happy, Will? You're going to kill Kyle with
good,
that pun.
Good, I'm glad.
Puns kill.
Yeah.
Getting acknowledgement for that pun had become my white whale, and I was concerned that it wasn't going to happen.
Oh, you're such a Moby Dick.
Happiness is a warm pun.
Squid and the whale.
Blackfish. Blackfish.
One fish, two fish, blackfish.
Bluefish.
Jews.
That's why, like, that was the sketch I was in Key and Peele, which was like, it was like Jordan was playing this, like, really irritating guy that was, like, the funniest guy
in college.
Were
you talking about how he was on Key and Peele?
No. But it's in context. Tell me about your Jag.
I don't bring up that car.
Oh, you're right.
You
sorry.
Guys bring it
I'm
up.
I'm sorry. Tell me about Hearst Castle.
Okay. It was so amazing.
Did you drive the Jag to Hearst Castle?
No. No, I didn't.
He just showed up to the gate, and they were like, what is this thing?
I'm sorry. We only allow actual Jaguars on the property.
Does this vehicle still have wheels?
I don't care. Oh, shit. Are they whale wheels? Is there a whale wheel in your wheel well?
It's not in my whale house.
All right. You can come in. Stop blubbering.
Yeah.
Wow, the whole Jonah and the whale thing has been sitting here all.
Yeah, you're right.
Pinocchio.
All right, you were on Key and Peele.
Oh yeah, but that was like the bit was that Jordan was like the funniest guy in college, and like, but like he was just struggling so hard to still be funny, and it was so hard because Keegan and everybody kept on laughing because we were watching like the Golden Globes, and he was like. I hope there's chips and dip. I hope there's nip slip. and then like they're like, you should just leave. He was like, oh, that's the closet. I better not come out of it. The struggle, and it was so hard because everything was so unfunny, but it made everybody laugh. Like even like once the camera guy laughed and ruined a take, like no one could hold it together the entire time.
I'm happy for them that they will go on and do bigger things, but I'm sad that their show's ending.
One of the best sketch comedy shows of the past 15 years, probably ever.
I would definitely put it in the pantheon of like. I would put it up with Kids in the Hall, like some of the greatest.
Yeah,
the greatest sketch shows.
Fucking Mitchell and Webb is up there.
Mitchell Webb,
Mr. Show.
I put The State there.
State's up there. Blue Collar Comedy. I'm sure you guys probably all
Mind of Mencia.
I really disagree with that.
Oh, okay.
I am going to strongly, in the strongest terms, disagree.
He's
with
more
that.
Of a Dunham well,
I guess
fan.
You, guess you might not be a redneck then.
I'm probably not.
If that's like the guy not getting the joke of Jeff Fox, we're like, you might be a redneck. Oh, I guess I'm not a redneck. I guess I'm still yet.
You said
not
I was going to relate to this comedy, Jolene.
If you pay $100 to see me tell these jokes, you might be a redneck.
I just feel like rednecks are such an oppressed minority. I just feel like his jokes are like really, they're just not funny. Like they're at the expense of an entire group of
you
of
know
people.
What? That is true. He's just totally taking out
he's
an
totally
entire.
He's making fun of white people who never get made fun of. And I mean, who always get made fun of. I'm confused.
You know, listen, carrying the social justice flag is very difficult because
it's heavy. I wear mine like a cape.
Made of dicks?
It's a cape.
Everyone's, everyone's sensitive about something. And so where, you know, when is it okay to talk about that stuff? And when is it not okay to go after stuff?
Well, when people make fun of, like, rednecks or white trash or something like that, they're essentially just making fun of poor people. And that's always like, it's like, look at them, look at them. They got to go to Walmart. And everyone's like, you're just making fun of poor people. What's
wrong
with you?
There was a great Onion headline that said, it was something, I'm going to mangle it, but you'll get the sense of it. It was Target shoppers making fun of Walmart shoppers, making fun of like Lowe's, Fred Meyer shoppers. Ah, I mean, it was just sort of like you're all basically shopping at the same place.
Yeah.
I know.
Cracked did a thing
says the guy who did a bunch of redneck jokes in his early stand-up. That was me.
Were they redneck jokes though?
Yeah, I did. I did because I went on the road and I had to abandon all of the stuff that I had been doing because all the comedy that I had been doing was in Los Angeles.
That's right.
And a lot of those jokes weren't flying on the road. I grew up in the South, so I did a lot of
Cracker Barrel.
There's a Dallas Reigns joke in the last episode of Titan's Grave.
And, really?
And I was watching. So I was watching an edit of it yesterday. And somebody, I think Yuri Lowenthal says something about Dallas Reigns, and Yuri and Allison and I just crack up because we've lived here for a really long time. And Hank and Laura are like, what? And I say out loud in the editing room, local reference! Because in the Project You Are Okay video, we made some local joke. And Chris is like, local references get you local work.
That's Blaine. The first time ever that was Blaine Kapach was hosting M-Bar. And he was making jokes about... I feel like he was making jokes about keys on Van Nuys or something like that.
I think that's the joke we made on. That's
oh no, I'm sorry. We made that on the UROK joke. His was about Vons. His was about Vons.
Vons becoming Johns. What's up with that?
Well, he.
What's the deal with Vons becoming Johns?
He has a whole.
No, they didn't become Johns.
No. They're different companies. They're different. It's just
the Squires have a great bit about that.
Really?
But it's, yeah.
Wait, hang on. I have lived my entire life thinking that a supermarket chain bought Vaughn's markets that had been like decommissioned or whatever. I don't think they closed markets.
It's a very complicated story that you've conducted.
And then just changed the J to a V because they could save money on the letters.
Yeah.
That's not. I'm being 100% serious. I just assume
it was a guy named John who was like, it's close enough to Vons that people will come in.
Well, have you ever been?
It's basically a V.
There's a lot of like Russian like food and Thai food
at John's.
It's a lot of ethnic food you can find there.
What's called like Lucky 38 or something like that is a. There's markets in the San Gabriel Valley that are lots of like really awesome Chinese food, like real Chinese food.
Yeah, like HK
like
Market in Koreatown.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Well, I've never been into a John's. But it looks delightful.
Yeah, you would not want to park your Jaguar.
Why are you doing that?
Parking lot.
Do you know how much fucking still people jokingly go, this question is for Chris Hardwick, King of the Nerds. God damn it! And then there's almost like a...
Heavy is the head that wears the crown, Chris.
I don't wear the crown!
You're wearing the crown right now.
He has it in a case on a shelf. It's mint,
it's
Will.
It's looking at it. It's not for wearing. It's basically the call sign of the Wheaton sympathist. That's what I know.
Excuse me, sir. We are partisans.
Cole's like, softy! Jim, softy!
And I'm like, fuck you guys!
they might as well just go, Will
That's
sent
That's right,
me.
You're the kinge of the nerds.
I'm not the kinge of the nerds!
Someday some kid's going to come up to you and go, long live the real King Will Wheaton, and then stab you with a lightsaber toy.
Oh, you're the general of the Jeeks! You're the general of the Jeeks!
The Wheatons send their regards.
Now I'm sad. No, but it is sort of a fun kind of a public. And every time it happens, I'm like, God damn it! Someone. There was something that was on the front page of Reddit the other day where it was like the joke was switching soft. It was switching G's and J's.
Yeah.
And I sort of commented like,
oh, wait, I remember that. I saw that. I have you as a friend on Reddit. So when I look at my friend's comments and I see what you've commented on.
Yeah. What was the whole thing?
And I'm like, it was about the whole GIF thing and how Chris is wrong. And
it was not about that at all.
It's exactly what it was about. And Chris just commented that we did like 20 minutes on that.
Yeah, the last time I was here. We just went on a run and flipped the J's.
It was really funny.
But it was like, I don't know, like a while ago.
It was cold enough that Myra was wearing torso shorts. So, I mean, the last time it was cold in Los Angeles, what was that, the 90s?
It was in the 1990s. Yeah, it was in the 1990s. What was torso shorts? Was a vest?
Is it was his vest.
Yeah. Yeah, he was wearing a vest.
Because before you got in the room, Myra was like, "My arms are cold." I'm like, "You're wearing a vest, stupid."
Torso shorts
are pointless.
Yeah. Mm. Yep.
And then you, I don't know if it was you or Myra. Somebody started a hashtag called torso shorts. Yes.
Oh, it must have been around the same time as like walrus. Yes.
It was really funny.
Did you have fun at Comic-Con?
I had more fun than I thought I would have at Comic-Con. I was really overwhelmed about going there. I was really nervous about being like pinned down by people or like trapped in crowds and stuff like that. And I had all kinds of anxiety about performing at Woodstock.
You've done a million at Woodstock. So what do you worry about?
I know, but I didn't have any new material.
Did you do something new or did you do something old?
I did something new. I basically did a monologue.
Did you record it?
It was recorded. I didn't record it. But it was recorded by people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I could listen to it back if I wanted to. But I basically did a monologue about poop. And
you sounded so ashamed of yourself.
Well, I mean, I am, but it was...
What'd you do at school today, boy? I did a monologue about poop.
And by monologue, I mean I shit from the class.
But it was almost 30 straight minutes, and it killed. Nice. I mean, it legitimately killed. And it was basically just like, remember when I asked you to help me write jokes and we were like trying to figure out like what kind of jokes I do? And I was like, I'm just not good at like quick one-line things. And I think you told me like that's just not my style. Like the style is like tell a longer story that has jokes in it. And I was like, okay, I guess that's what I'm going to do. And I knew where the funny parts were in this thing, but I hadn't worked it out. I hadn't written it down or anything. I just... Up until literally minutes before I went on stage, I didn't know what I was going to do.
But sometimes sometimes that can work in your favor because when you're in the moment, your brain will automatically filter out all the chaff and then just get right to the – because you're basically – the audience can be a gun pointed at your head.
Yeah.
And so you're just sort of like tap dancing and you don't have time to judge what you're saying. And then sometimes it comes out as economically as possible – as opposed to if you sit down and it gets really wordy and then you write.
The instinct pops in.
Because when you sit down to write, I tend to write more like it's an essay.
Me too.
And by that I mean a gang member. What?
No.
What?
No.
No, I just meant very economical and efficient.
No, I don't. That's
what you talking about?
That's not.
Don't
how,
you
that's...
know I'm loco?
That's all I can quote from that.
Yeah,
yeah. There was a lot of that stuff. Sample.
In that era of music, there was a lot of like the high pitch kind of like. What was that like? That one, like, it makes two to make a thing go right. But there was
DJ. No, that was Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock.
Yes.
But, like, that was in a lot of stuff. They're like,
Jonah.
That precedes.
Yes, I got it.
Because he was in the band! He was in the band! Why am I doing Pete Holmes now?
That Rob Bass song actually predates the meow movement by
a lot.
Several years.
10 years, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. But that's been used a lot, is what I mean.
Yes, it has been used
a lot. I want to rock right now. I'm Rob Bass and I came to get down. I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone because I get stupid. I mean, outrageous. I'll do the rap if you can't take it.
I'm sorry. I'm
you're clipping the highs off of your of your song. It's
weird. Turn down the gate, Chris.
Oh,
audio engineering jokes. Audio engineering jokes. Audio engineering jokes.
That's what I would.
They're all full of EQ.
That's what I would pitch to the. That's what I pitch to the basketball team, the Clippers, is that someone just comes out and they clip every other like all of their. It's just an unspoken joke.
Yeah.
And then, hey, just, and then like just at halftime, instead of cheerleaders, it's people in little tiny cars just bumping into the corners. Just like that's all they do.
Yeah, and then other people just like take trimming their nails.
Yeah.
Any other words? Words.
Ships. Ships.
Words. Ships.
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 Whaling.
News. Whaling.
Whaling.
The Whaler. BK's Whaler. Well, welcome to Free Association.
You can get in without paying.
You know, it's funny that.
I was.
Everyone
I was just,
knows it's free Wendy.
It was just. I was
that
just
was
doing...
the association, the Pansy Association. This, you know what's funny is you guys weren't here yesterday, but Ed Helms was on yesterday, and I pitched this game to him where, and I'll, you'll hear it twice in a week. I'm sorry, but it's just because the whole premise behind UCB comedy is like when you're improvising, don't think. Mm-hmm. But I pitched a type of improv show called Do Think, where you have to explain how you got
everything.
From A
oh,
to
Jesus. Where you go.
See, this is funny this? Because.
Yeah, exactly. Because what's better than watching jokes get explained? Your Wootstock, so you were talking about stress about Wootstock. Yeah. And
But you made a really good, that's a really good point about like, I think it's a really good point for just for performing in general, right? Like there's those great moments that you don't script, that you don't think of, and you're just like, this would be funny, and you say it. And, you know, I think if you have – I do not have close to the experience you guys have doing comedy, but but that, you know, sort of like for me, knowing, all right, I can get back to this thing if I have to. I know this is a piece that works, and I can just, and it's very much like creative writing for me. Like I know these beats have to happen, and it's what comes in between that's really fun and surprising, and is where like all that's where like all the work is building the tent poles, and the fun is like connecting them together.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the problem for a lot of young performers is that they have this idea in their head of, you know, comedy is ...
Yeah.
So when you were saying, I don't do short, it's like, well, that's your idea of what you think comedy is, but that's not what it is, however you express your ideas. Like
yeah.
you don't have the perspective on yourself to understand that, oh, I'm naturally funny and I'm going to, just the way that I present ideas will come out a certain way because it doesn't feel like you're doing anything when you're doing that.
Right.
And so you think, well, comedy is doing X, but it's actually just being yourself.
I got a lot of inspiration and validation and was able to give myself like a little bit of permission watching Aziz Ansari perform.
Mm-hmm.
The one that he did at the show that he did at Madison Square
Garden.
That's
a great special.
It's so funny. And it's not – I mean it's – if you were to break it down to like how many like jokes are in this, it's like – four kind of like themes, you know.
Yeah,
with sort
and
of
I
jokes
love the way he
them.
Directed it too, with like the backgrounds changing. Like every time
really
he enters
funny.
A new theme about something, the background, the whole set changes.
I mean, what's fun? What a really fun way to see comedy is is you know who the performer is. Your Wootstock audience knew you. You know Aziz, and so you're basically going to watch someone who is like your buddy.
Yeah,
and you already understand a lot of context about who they are and what they're about, and so. Then it just gets all the other stuff out of the way. It's different than going to a club where you may not know the comic or the comic doesn't know the audience and they have to – that just happened to me in Montreal. I did a practice set for my TV set and the practice set didn't go well. Like to the point where I was like, oh, fuck. And I had the same thing that you go through your entire career. You're like,
maybe it's not good.
Maybe I shouldn't be doing this.
Maybe I actually do suck.
And then I realized I'm used to doing hour-long sets. I didn't know how to take a handful of things out of context and put it into a 10-minute chunk. And also the audience didn't – this practice audience didn't know me, and I came in with jokes that I've been spoiled because audiences know me when I go on stage. So it was a wonderful reminder of like, no, you got to focus and – you know, like don't use the audience knowing you as a safety net. And so I had to readjust for the actual taping, which went great, but it was
so you did 10 minutes at Montreal?
I did 10 in Montreal TV? And then I did an hour long show. Yeah. I did a 10-minute set with a gala that Ellie Kemper hosted, and it was.
I love her so much.
It was
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is such a good show.
Ellie was great.
There's a lot about that show that I really don't like, and she is so phenomenal in it that I stayed through all the way to the end.
Yeah.
Even when I was like, this show is really bailed on the promise of the premise.
It's a cartoon.
That I was like, oh my God, she could do anything.
She was really funny. Yeah. She opened and closed with musical numbers. She hosted the gala. And they'll have a celebrity host a gala show in Montreal, and they'll have a bunch of comics. And so it was like Neil Patrick Harris hosted a gala, and Ellie hosted a gala, and a few other people. And so my gala was me and Thomas Middleditch, Pete Holmes, Margaret Cho, Wyatt Senek, Michael Che.
Holy shit!
I don't know if I'm forgetting anyone, but it was a pretty incredible lineup of people.
This is my Wyatt Senek story. I was at after we did a show during SF Sketchfest. Adam Savage had a little party at his workshop place, and I don't like to go to parties because I never know anybody, and I always feel super weird. But I know Adam really, really, really well, and I love his workshop space. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go to the party. So we go to the party. And I'm like, I'm starving, right? But they had banh mi sandwiches there. So I was like, yes, bring them all to me. So I'm sitting there eating I'm eating like a caricature, right? I'm like, I wash myself with a rag on a stick. I'm just going crazy, right? And I look over and there's fucking Wyatt Senek like sitting down. And I'm like, I love him. I mean, his comedy just kills me. And he's on The Daily Show, he's flawless. And I'm just like, I gotta go. So I'm like trying to psych myself up. And then I see that he's looking at me. I'm like, oh, fuck. He just saw me staring at him and he thinks I'm just some fucking weird guy. And I've ruined it. And then I'm like, well, I guess I have to go in now. You know, I wasn't ready, but I just gotta go. So I walk over and I put out my hand and I said, I'm really sorry to bother you, but I just want to introduce myself. My name's Will, and I'm just a huge fan of your work, and I wanted to say thank you for that. And he stands up, and he's much taller than me, like most people are. And he says, thanks, man, I'm such a huge fan of your work, too. And I'm like, oh, that's a thing people have to say. And then he goes on to sort of, like, speak in specifics about things that I've done.
The Curse.
And like, huge fan of The Curse. and it really is like that shot that they reused over and over and over again where you made the really obvious lame choice.
You know how much I love
really
that you
good.
Can joke about The Curse. There was a time in Will's life where if you said The Curse, you could just see the hairs on the back of his neck go up.
He was like talking about tabletop and like stuff that he was like, I really love that stuff that you do. And I was like, I wasn't prepared for this. I don't have conversation ready to go.
So you just threw your sandwiches at him and ran.
And ran, basically, yeah.
He's Wyatt's fantastic, and he was just sort of processing the idea that, you know, he was on Maron's show and talked about a fight that he had with Jon Stewart, and it got picked up by blogs because it's, you know, ever since Mark had the president on, I think there are crucial points, I think, in your career as a performer where most of your life you just feel like, I'm flying under the radar, it doesn't really matter what I say, no one really, you know. And then something happens where it sort of elevates, and so I think once the president was on, it's like the media really started looking at it at the show was like, oh, it breaks news in it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So this thing and you know, I mean, I don't, you know, I don't want to stir the pot or put words in Wyatt's mouth, but his general sense was like, you know, they took this clip. They didn't even listen to the whole conversation. All of the news outlets just took this one clip and spun it however they wanted to kind of spin it. And it wasn't like they're cheating the story that happened. And, you know,
it's lazy. It's lazy and it fits a narrative that they want to. That they want to push.
Here's what's upset. Here's one of the things that's sort of bothersome to me is that it's, you know, you said, well, I have Social Justice Academy, but there are social justice warriors in the world that sort of feel like, oh, they just want to like destroy things. They're angry and they just want to destroy things. That it mm-hmm. doesn't feel so much about like, it's not that you want the world to be a better place. You're trying to do something that's more from an ego place than a place of like, I want to help the world.
Yeah, I think that's more about a person just being being angry about a thing and absolutely having the right to feel that way. I've had these conversations with a couple of people where I've said, you know, like, I'm on your side and it would be great if you just stopped kind of losing your shit at me because I'm a white cis guy. Like, that doesn't mean that I can't care about the same thing you care about. And then this person was like, now you're tone policing me. And I'm like, you know, I don't think you want to reach a point of agreement. I think you want to be right. You want me to be wrong. And there's nothing I can say that's going to make this get to a place where it's okay. So go fuck yourself.
Well, I mean, and the thing is that ultimately, if you do care about it, social justice in the literal sense, I think that your, in my opinion, I think your guiding principle should be how can we understand each other better? How can we understand this?
How can we who live on life's lowest difficulty setting sort of like flatten the curve for people who don't?
Right.
I mean, I think that we just have that responsibility, and it's the thing that I try my best to do that.
Like aggression right out of the gate is not really the best tactic because it just creates more aggression.
Right.
It just creates more aggression in people, and it's a very Newtonian. It just, you're going to get the equal and opposite. You're going to get in the opposite direction. You're going to get it back, and rather than. I mean, if someone says, hey, I'm really upset because you said this or this happened and I don't understand why, I'm much more likely to go either A, you know, that was dumb. I shouldn't have done that. Or, oh, well, you know, I have a history of this and this is what I meant by this. And I didn't, you know, as opposed to like, fuck you, you piece of it. And then I'm going to go, well, fuck you back in the face, you know.
Fuck you more.
Fuck you like way more. And so I feel like there's a thing that's happening now, which is that And it used to just be smaller sites, but larger media outlets are clickbaiting now, and they are manipulating people's emotions.
Well, I think everybody's clickbaiting.
Of course.
I mean, and I think that's been going on for a long time. Everybody gives BuzzFeed a hard time for it, but CNN does it on fucking television. Fox News has been doing it since 1998. I mean, you know, I mean, it's like that's a thing that everybody
does. Did anyone ever stop to go, oh, you are manipulating people's emotions because you know they will be pissed about this so that you get traffic. You are – like I would think that the people that were upset would probably not be super cool if they realized like a large corporation is basically just manipulating our emotions for traffic.
I interviewed Patton Oswalt for Playboy and we were talking about how
– what were his turn-ons and turn-offs? Doesn't like mean people?
Man, does not.
Turn-ons,
does,
motorcycles.
I cannot wait to see that spread.
Let me tell you, I really wanted to be there for the shoot and they wouldn't let me because I was going to, quote, make it weird. Whatever. But we talked about headlines being written manipulatively and Cosby came up briefly and he said, so Patton said, so I said, you know, like this, we've had at this point, it was, you know, it was appalling at like 8 or 9 women that had, you know, that were all telling the same story then, you know, and all that. And he said, so I said this thing about, I said, look, it's kind of like roaches. Like you see a single roach, like there's 50 more in the wall that haven't come out yet. And he said, what do you think the headline was? And I said, oh, it's Patton Oswalt compares rape survivors rape victims to roaches.
Right.
And he said, that was it. And I said, so where was it? And he said, it was in Salon. And Salon's like supposedly like you're on the same side. Mm. And he said, so
and you,
then
and you feel like you know that they must have known what
he meant. Of course they know. Of course they do. But it's that thing where like he said, you know, and they don't care. They got the click. That's all they care about. And that actually does a huge disservice to everyone. And what I think starts happening is people get like where it's like, well, fuck you. I'm not talking to anybody. I'm not gonna talk to the press because I can't trust you. Look at the way the New York Times just fucked up on the whole Hillary Clinton email thing this last week. I mean, it could not have been more wrong. And basic fact checking, just responsible fact checking, would have prevented all of that, right? But it's like we got to be first, and you know we're just gonna be stenographers for this thing that we heard. So here we go, and then like it's wrong, but. the thing that's wrong has become the narrative. So everything people talk about and every article that's written and every comment on it is responding to the false narrative rather than responding to the incorrect information. The story should be New York Times fucks up, gets story completely wrong. And instead it's, yeah, but what did she really do? When the answer is nothing. and that was it.
I'm concerned that people don't realize how manipulated they're being by clickbaity people trying to. I mean, it's bad because it creates false narratives, like you're saying. Yeah. And then the companies responsible don't give a shit because it's like, oh, but you know, like 100,000 people, liked this on Facebook, or, you know, like, yeah. Well, fuck that's so socially irresponsible. And you know, with the patent thing, I can't believe. Of course, they knew that he was talking about red flags, not people.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, there was a post on Reddit that was so wonderfully written, but it was a concern that someone had about At Midnight, this person said, you know, there have been a lot of Cosby jokes on At Midnight, and I'm kind of getting tired of them. You know, it's sort of like when SNL was doing O.J. Simpson jokes, and you know, and I so appreciated the way it was written because it said like, hey, you know, I am a fan of the show. I don't understand why this is happening. I don't really like it, and yeah. I would love to know. I have yet. Well, I guess I'm responding now, but I didn't respond in the thread yet because I had to go to a meeting. But what I wanted to say was, look, comedians decide what they want to say when they come on. We're not an ensemble cast show. It's not like we're saying let's hit Cosby jokes every night. It's just it's in the news a lot and it's the forefront of comedians' minds. And in some cases, I think you know someone brought up the point. They're probably just trying to make a. It's edgy because I'm making a joke about.
I want to make a topical reference.
But I think in a lot of senses where it comes from, you know, because there are people who are like, oh, well, you're trying to make, you know, you're trying to make rape funny. And it's like, no, it's the guy. He needs to be taken down.
Yeah.
And a comedian can't go punch him in the face. So the only thing that a comic can do is punch him with jokes.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like when Mel Brooks was on the podcast and he said, you know, one of the purposes of comedy should be to subvert power because most people have used Hitler as a punchline in a joke. That doesn't mean that they think genocide is funny. It just means fuck that guy. We have to keep him down and shamed where he belongs so that A, we never forget. We never ever forget. And that B, we hopefully don't let it happen again. Like there's a real social purpose behind comedy when it's used responsibly, but you know, nowhere have I seen anyone make fun of the victims or make fun of the, you know, like what was it's this person needs to be brought down because this guy that we thought had affected all this incredible positive social change and broke boundaries in comedy entertainment is literally one of the worst human beings on the planet now.
Yeah.
So it's I mean, not now, always has been. We just didn't know about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I feel like, you know, when comics are doing that, they're trying to ridicule this guy to make sure that people don't take him seriously anymore because.
And there's a tradition of that in comedy that goes back that I am aware of it starting with Lenny Bruce and then really like the comics that shaped my sense of what comedy is supposed to be were like George Carlin and Bill Hicks.
Larry the Cable Guy.
Larry the Cable Guy. Sorry, Howie just, Mandel. Mencia. like those are the guys that really – but that sense of like – and Lewis Black too. Like you can like basically rage about stuff but you can be funny when you do it.
Yeah.
And that's – and it's like intelligent. I mean don't get me wrong. I still love a good fart joke. I did 25 minutes all about diarrhea and it was terrific. But I think that's important. I think it's one of the great things about just any sort of art form that art can be like you can make it into something and you can use art to do stuff. And I think it's one of the reasons that art exists.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the reasons that we have. That's why like that – and it's why I get so just – annoyed by garbage entertainment on television and stuff that just feels like junk food filler to me. I'm like, oh, you're spending money on that garbage when you could be spending money to make something that like you know, that's cool, that matters, that changes things, that, that,
you know,
like,
the garbage,
you know,
doesn't bother me
people.
Because the garbage sort of makes you appreciate the good stuff. If every show was Breaking Bad, then no show would be Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Hmm? Huh? No? No,
well,
I guess there would just be a lot of good television.
Then, no one could afford to make Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Are you watching Mr. Robot?
I'm not. I just became aware of Mr. Robot, and I just became aware of humans.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Ex Machina,
yep.
and was raving about how much.
But Mr.
I
Robot's
loved
about
it.
Hackers.
But I guess because Ex Machina has a robot in it, and Mr. Robot has the name Robot in the title, when I was like, Ex Machina is amazing, and all these people were like, you got to watch Mr. Robot. So I haven't. Did you watch Halt and Catch Fire?
I haven't seen it yet.
People go crazy for that
but
show.
I don't like it at all.
Really?
Oh.
I've been hearing lately that
I could not disagree more. I think
it's
quality programming.
But wait a minute. But you haven't really?
What?
Halt and Talk About Fire.
Are you doing Halt and Talk About Fire?
Yeah. I'm doing Halt.
Yeah. That was Jonah's joke. I said it. I just said it louder. It was Jonah's joke. Mine was going to be something about I was trying to figure out a way that we could make an after show with a bulletin board system name. I just couldn't. I'm Chris Hardwick, and welcome to Chat Room. Halt and IRC.
I am Chris Hardwick. Welcome to 10, watch Halt Catch and Fire. 20, go to 10. 30, run.
That would actually have a programming error in it because 30 would never actually, you'd never get to 30 because 20 sends you right back to 10 and 30 never shows up.
No,
so
no,
you'd
no,
actually, no. But it looks like you're putting a microphone on your dick.
That's right, Will.
Listen, all I'm saying is when I come at the King of the Nerds, I don't miss.
I flip.
This proves I'm not the king.
The king would never flip the lines of code.
Maybe he would if he wants people to think that he's weak.
God damn it.
It's a good way to draw out his enemies. I know what you're doing. You're keeping your enemies closer. I know exactly what you're doing.
No, I legitimately fucked that up.
You're like, if enemy in 10, move enemy with 5.
This is like fucking like James Bond when the villain and James Bond are both at the table, the poker table.
In the most boring Bond film ever.
Anyway, I wanted to love Halt and Catch Fire, and I watched, I think, the first 3 episodes, and I was just like, no, I'm out. It's trying so hard, and I didn't care about the characters, and the references were over referenced, and I was just like, ugh. But yeah, but people love it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe I'll give it another chance. I'm just so tired of being burned by stuff that I'm like, oh, this is gonna be great. No, it. Oh God. Oh God. No, it's not at all.
Will you do me a favor?
Go fuck yourself.
No. Would you just quickly do an imitation of Tony the Tiger's catchphrase?
What? Why?
Just do it.
I
want you to do it.
I feel like this is going to be taken out of context.
Nope, it's not at all. That,
really?
Yeah.
I feel.
Just do it. I want to hear you do it.
Why?
Because you have a great voice. I just want to hear
it. I'm really. I should not be doing this, but I'm going to do
okay,
it.
Great.
Because we've been friends for, as it turns out, 27 years. Yeah, I know.
Careful. Seems like it's a tiger trap.
Shut up.
This feels like it could turn into some sort of serial joke.
No. Oh, hey! Yeah, it's a serial joke. So what's the catchphrase?
MailKimp?
No, what's the catchphrase again? It's not MailKimp.
That was a serial joke.
That was
right? Fun with homonyms. They're great.
Great. So, Katie, so you can just edit that in when Will starts talking about Halt and Catch Fire.
Yeah.
The long game with Chris Hardwick.
I knew it was coming.
You waited
coming.
It out. I admire that.
Damn it.
Was a bad Tony the Tiger, though.
Katie, you can cut that in when he's talking about how he doesn't care about his beautiful car.
They're great?
They're great.
So you can cut that in when we're talking about... when I say something about racists, and then you can just have Will go, they're great.
And then when he's talking about racists, you can cut that in to when he's talking about how the audience didn't like him in Montreal.
And then you can you can cut Will in saying, like, I'm Will Wiener.
God, your impressions of me are my favorite. It's the only time in my life I get to actually hear what I sound like when it's not me saying it.
I'm Will Wiener.
It's the closest I get to having sex
my
with
face
myself.
Is a Play-Doh Fun Factory, a beard. And my face has just been out a beard.
It's more of a mop top hair shop of beards.
But I call it a beard.
And then that's
kind of dovetailing into Cosby almost.
No, I was just going to say, you can cut that into what we're talking about Cosby.
You know? And you can cut that in to when Will was talking about how he hates all races and creeds.
I don't know why. Oh, man, now we have to talk about Rockies. We have a place to cut in that line about you talking about Creed and also 90s music.
this is like the end of Bill and Ted's. We got to remember to go back in time.
And leave the keys here. And then the one where they drop the trash can out of the sky completely baffles me. Like, when did they...
Have you ever sat down and tried to make a Bill and Ted series of timelines the way you do it with Primer?
Oh, my God.
Like, oh, man, I've run out of paper.
Primer's impossible to follow. It's literally...
No. I've actually... Someone made...
One of the guys started it before you entered the story.
Oh, yeah.
He knew it already worked, so he started it up. And then that's why he had been manipulating it the entire time.
Oh, now I got to go watch it again.
There's a whole Rocco's Basilisk thing in Primer that I think has to like predate the beginning of the actual film.
You see that guy's other movie, Upstream Color?
No.
Ooh,
is it good?
It's well.
Is this Nacho Vigalondo?
No, Nacho Vigalondo is Time Crimes and Open Windows.
Oh, Crime Times. Crime Times.
What's his name?
Shane Carruth.
Yeah, it's very. David Lynch.
Okay. I'm still on board.
And it's just like tonally.
You sure you don't mean Cronenberg?
Yeah. I was on my friend's podcast earlier and I was saying something about like deprivation tanks and I'm like, it's like Videodrome. And then like an hour later, one guy was like, you mean Altered States? Yeah. I was like, well, go fuck me.
Go fuck myself.
Yeah. But yeah, it's
you may
really...
be finding yourself slipping out of a hallucinatory state. Soon pass.
It's a really interesting, really like crazy movie that just makes you feel weird and you'll really understand what's going on, but it's really not sci-fi, not, you know, it's just this weird thing.
I love that.
But
sounds great.
Beautiful. And it's the whole thing is kind of like a montage almost. It's like the way it just skips forward without like telling you anything.
Can I tell you about Beautiful? I'm going to tell you about Beautiful. Beautiful was moderating the Con Man panel at Comic-Con, and at the end, having the entirety of Hall H sing "Stand by Me" at Will. Yeah.
That was beautiful.
A song that
I should
Will
not
previously,
have.
You could never sing it near him. He would
no,
go,
no,
shut
you
up,
no,
shut up, shut up!
No, you still can't. You still can't. I still don't like it. But doing it there, like, I don't feel awesome very often. And you made me feel awesome for a minute there. No, it was really, I'm not fishing for that. I'm just saying, like, I generally, I'm just like, thank you. I know, you know, generally I'm just like, yeah, you know, I'm doing my best not to suck and not always succeeding, but that's okay. I'll try harder next time.
Well, you know
and
what? Then, that's so crazy. It's so crazy how weird about yourself you are, and it makes so many things make sense to me in context now. When we were young, when we were teenagers and we used to go to Disneyland all the time, people would come up to Will constantly and be like, can I take a picture? And be like, oh, fine. And he was really cranky about it. I'm like, what's the deal? Like, why are you so? And it's because you don't feel comfortable with people giving you compliments. Because you don't like yourself for some reason.
When I was younger, I didn't realize that someone doing that isn't about me, it's about them. And the real kindness is to say thank you when someone's like, I loved you in a thing, right? Like you don't want to say, here's all the reasons you're wrong for liking that thing. What you want to say is, thank you for liking that thing.
Because that's a very selfish approach. You're basically going like, you're dumb and you have bad taste.
Exactly. Did you have that problem in relationships too?
I had that problem in everything.
Yeah.
Just a lack of self-esteem and a lack of confidence and just not really knowing who I was. And I felt like that like well into my 20s and just like not knowing and being weird. And also having this like constant feeling of I'm the only one who's not in on the joke.
Right.
You know, like no
That's
one.
That's how I feel
no,
about Drake.
No one. No, Drake's just not good. You're not. No, I'm there. Let's not be in on that joke together.
Yeah, good, great.
But there was that sense of like, I don't deserve this. I don't, you know, it's when something happens that I'm in that's good, I just got lucky. It was a fluke. I didn't earn it. Because most of the time when I really wanted something and I worked really hard for it, whatever it was, I never got it. I mean, to this day, I turn 43 tomorrow.
Tomorrow's the 29th.
It's weird. 30 years ago today, we were filming Stand By Me.
Oh, crazy.
30 years ago, we were in Oregon shooting Stand By Me. Don't do it. To this day, I don't book auditions. I never book auditions. The only thing I've auditioned for in literally years that I've booked was when I auditioned for the Firefly online game. And I didn't even know I was auditioning. Andrea Romano was like, would you just send us a voice, like just send us a sample of these lines so I can just let the producers know what you sound like.
Hello, I'm Malcolm Reynolds.
And then I was, and then I found out at Comic-Con that I actually auditioned against really good people. But there's this thing where like I go in an audition and I always make it to the last three. Sometimes I make it to the last two every single time, and I never get the job, ever. And it's become this thing that's like, I mean, I'll still kind of go, but I've kind of lost the passion for it because what's the point? Like, I would rather just not – like, I'm nobody remembers who finished second, especially when the person who finished second doesn't get in the movie. Yeah. You know?
The emotional roller coaster of, like –
it's just like – it's just like, not enough. You know, it's close. Like it doesn't matter.
Can I tell you, I had that for – years and years and years and years and years and years, and it was a long running joke with my manager of like, well, I'm going to get down to the last two, and then they're going to offer it to Joe Rogan. You know, it was like a lot of hosting jobs. And then I just stopped auditioning for stuff because it wasn't fun anymore. And I'm like, this isn't fun. And I just went and made a thing myself.
That's basically what I did.
Which was largely inspired by you. So,
really?
Of course. Because you had already gone off to – I saw you go off and start making your own thing and like, you know – well, long before – like even in the 90s, like when you just went to Kansas to work with the Video Toaster Company. But even in 2000 where you're like, I'm going to blog. Like you just started making your own thing and you built your own audience. And I'm like, that's really cool.
That's weird because I feel like we kind of do the same thing, but you do it so much better than I do and you do it so much more successfully than
no,
I do.
No. I mean I think – you know, to be completely honest, I kind of feel like the artificial version of you.
Someone said I'm the B side of Chris Hardwick, and I'm like, I totally am. And I don't have a problem with that. I don't think it's bad. I think it's great.
No, but I think, you know, like when people come at me with like the people tell me I'm not the real, you're not a real comic, you're not a real nerd, And so with the not a real nerd stuff, I go, you know, if you asked Will, we've been friends since we were kids, and you would see that that I am what about the things that I say that I like. But I also feel like compared to you, I feel artificial. I feel like an artificial nerd compared to you because you really – you do go
– maybe that's because you're comfortable with people. Maybe it's because you know how to human. Maybe that's why. I mean
teach me how to human.
Difference.
You know what's interesting is that – that podcasting actually helped me a lot with social anxiety.
Really?
Of course, because, you know, for 700 and some episodes, almost 1,000 hours probably, I've had to sit down and talk to people and keep a conversation in the air for over an hour.
That's true.
Now in the last few years, mostly with people I don't know.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was useful when, you know, the brief period of time where I was dating or like just being at parties and being like you and not being comfortable in large public situations. I just sort of can shut down and I feel like weird and lonely and isolated. But this practice of sitting down and talking to people, I kind of have that as a mode where I can just sort of go in and talk to them now and I feel a lot more comfortable where I'm comfortable in groups. Like if I have a group of people and I can sort of, but just like what it's like you know, where I'm like, I don't feel weird and I don't know.
For the longest time, and to go back to like when we were kids going to Disneyland, what was so hard for me is that I felt like a lot of the people that would come up to talk to me when we were doing stuff never, like if we were just people at a place, would never have wanted to talk to me. Like, there was nothing about me that would have made people want to talk to me. And that the only reason anybody cared at all was because I had been on TV or I had been in a movie. And I always felt like that's not about me. That's about a thing that I did. Like, that's not about me. That's about the perception that I'm famous. And I felt like it was just fake. And when people ask me, this comes up all, not as much now because I've been married for almost 20 years. But when I was younger, it would be like, so I bet you fucked a lot of ladies when you were famous on the TVs and stuff. And I'm like, no. No, actually, the number of that is zero, because I probably like could have used the perception of fame to like get into bed with somebody, but I didn't want that because that wasn't me. That wasn't a thing that I chose, right? Like, I didn't want to be in those stupid teen magazines, and I didn't want to be a person people recognized on the street and stuff. I just wanted to be like, I wanted to be an actor. And I wanted to like tell the story, and I want like I liked that. I liked
I mean,
the make believe and all
come
stuff.
Up. Maybe some
and I
people...
never felt like it was. And I mean, it may not have been about. It may not have. But that was my perception at like, sure, you know, 17, 18, 19.
I think
years
in a
old.
Lot of cases, it's. I mean, in some senses, I feel like now with selfie culture, that we at a certain point we're just sort of Pokemon characters. Where it's like, I gotta catch him.
You have to use a Master Ball to catch Wheaton.
Wheaton sword. But
wild Will Wheaton appeared.
But I also feel like, but in a lot of senses, yes, technically it's something that you did, but that something that you did came from a part of you, and ultimately it's about how you make people feel.
Right. I didn't get that back then. I get that now. I mean, now when someone's like, hey, I really liked Tabletop, or I like Titan's Grave, or you know, you wrote about a thing and I liked it, or I listened to your podcast, but then I feel like, cool, that's a thing I made. Like, I went, yes, I'm going to do this, you know, I'm going to work hard to create this thing and work with people to help it become a thing. When I was younger, it was basically my parents saying, like, you're going to go do this,
right?
And it wasn't my choice, and it's not what I wanted, and it just felt fake.
Right.
And I knew that it wouldn't – I knew that it couldn't possibly last forever.
I think you're one of the most authentic people I know, because you stand up for what you believe in and you never waver, and you stick up for people when it would be easier sometimes for people in your position to not do that. And you are who you are. Like, it doesn't – you're not affected by anything else. It's just like, you know, this is who I am, and this is what I believe in, and these are the causes that I care about, and this is the stuff that I like. And if you don't agree with that, then good day. You know, like, it's – and
it's less good day and more go fuck yourself. I mean, let's be honest.
Good day fucking yourself.
I thank you. I mean, that's the only way I know how to be. I spent a long time trying to be someone different. It's so weird, man. I've been playing Pinball Arcade on Steam, which is really fun. But I've been playing these pinball games that I played when I worked for NewTek in Kansas. And I was trying so hard to be somebody I wasn't then. Like, I was just trying so hard to, like, be cool and be edgy and be, like, a punk and all that stuff. And like, not be Wesley Crusher and all that stuff. And I basically – the end result of that was I was just kind of a douchebag. And I think that being a douchebag is – it's a class feature. It's, like, it's part of that level that everybody has to go through. Sometimes you're lucky and you dodge it. But I think everybody's a douchebag at some point in their life. And it's just part of – it's part of figuring out, like, ew, I don't like being this, you know, and, like, getting out of it. But – so I've been playing a lot of these pinball games that I played back then. And – I have been remembering that time, and I really want to write about it or do like a Radio Free Burrito about it, just about that time of trying so hard to be something that I wasn't, instead of just embracing and being comfortable with the thing that I am. And it took that to make me just comfortable with and accepting of, like, kind of what's important to me and what my personality is.
So you went into a douche cocoon. And you
I basically did, and I emerged as a social justice butterfly. but you know, and it's really, I mean, it's really kind of you to say that, and that, I mean, like, that means a lot to me. And knowing all of that, I would still really love to read an amazing script, audition for it, and book the fucking job. And it just never happens. So all of that other stuff
How about this? It hasn't happened yet.
I guess.
Yet.
But I turn 43 tomorrow.
Doesn't matter. You'll live for 50 more years. Like, just
Ed Harris didn't really start gigging it real hard until he was in his 50s.
I mean, you have to.
I've got
to
wait 7 years.
Go fuck yourself.
It hasn't happened yet, but the past does not equal the future unless you.
Yeah,
you
I
also,
know that.
You also have to be. You also have to be careful that you don't. That you're not so much in this mental pattern that you don't recognize the shit when it starts happening. When you're like, yeah, but still. Like, so many people just get into this kind of, yeah, but still. Yeah, but you have this and that. Yeah, but still.
Oh, yeah. I don't live there at all. You know, I mean, like, I am super, super cognizant. And we've talked about it on the podcast before. Like, just how grateful I am for just the things that I get to do and the stuff that I get to make. And then I make a really great, really comfortable living. And as long as I'm not just, like, a giant fucking idiot, I should be basically okay for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a remarkable way to feel at what feels like – I mean, I just said I'm turning 43 and that feels old, but I still feel like I'm really young. You know, and I've got – and I've got – oh, go fuck
Sorry.
Yourself. Go fuck
yourself. I've got, I realize I'm going to get a laugh from this guy.
Yeah, because I'm a year older still.
And I've got, you know, so I mean, I have two kids who are adults on their own, but now is a shitty fucking time to be in your early 20s and it's hard to get work and all that stuff. And I can help give them a little bit of a leg up and all that stuff. So I'm aware of all of that. And I don't take any of it for granted. And I don't like, I know that there's, it's so easy to just look at all the things you have and focus on the one thing or two things that you don't. And that's just no way to live. And I don't know if I even really want to be on camera anymore, you know, but it is. It would feel really good. It's on my list. I would like to work hard for a job and earn that job in the room. I've earned a lot of jobs through the body of work that I have. And that's really great. I mean, that's really cool, you know? But I would still really love to go in, directly compete for a role with other actors. You know, I walk into these rooms and I'm like, this is not happening, because I just see these amazing people around me, right? I would love just once to go in and do the work and book the job because I earned it that way.
You know what's really funny listening to you is that you've accomplished so much more than that because you basically – You know, these people who might go in and book these jobs, like when you look at everything that you've accomplished in your life and the people that you brought together and the change that you've affected and all the things, you know, like all of the positivity for nerd and geek culture and everything, it's so much more. I mean, it's basically like if you were the president and going, I really just want to be student of the day at Westfield Elementary School. Why can't I just be student? But you got to, you're president.
I know, I really want that bumper sticker for my car.
I mean, you have done so much more. Like,
yeah,
you understand,
I know.
In the position you were in, you could have ended up just being a bitter, shitty adult. Who was a famous kid actor, and you carved out this whole wonderful, you know, like. You know, like
yeah, I'm aware of it. I am aware of that all the time, and that's the thing I feel really good about. And I think it's a thing that we both did. Like, we both had moments in our life where we were like, "This is unsustainable."
Well, because
this is going the wrong way.
Because
it's time to turn this around.
It's not even just going through the douche cocoon phase, but it's also, you know, when the rest of the entertainment business is like, "That'll be enough," and you know. And we're like,
please leave. If you can, there's the door.
And so
that's how they talk to you, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, oh, I've heard it.
We just went. And we just went and made our own thing.
I'm
gonna
start my own with hookers and blackjack.
So when I see, people like, oh, you know, guys like Harvick and Wheaton just jumped on the bandwagon and NerdCon. It's like, I think we. Helped bring in girders.
I'm like, fuck you, I built the bandwagon. when someone's like, oh, you're a bandwagon Kings fan, I'm like, you fucking dick, I've been on that bandwagon since 1983. I am the bandwagon.
You are the danger.
I am the one who knocks and delivers your season tickets.
But it's, you know, but I think you come off more authentically than I come off. I think I have a bit of a I think I have something about myself that's a little douchey in my DNA. And when people,
not you, Chris,
shut up, bitch.
No, dog, that's tight, dog. That's tight right there. Yeah, you were fronted and you said, no, dog.
No. You gotta smack a bitch down.
I wish
Jonah Ray been smacked down.
I wish people listening to this could have seen the amazing slow mo fist bump that just happened. It was so great. That fist bump was so slow mo and perfect, it was Sandler esque.
But I think part of what people read with me is that, you know, when I was growing up, my family moved a lot.
Yeah.
And so I was constantly having to
reinvent yourself and fit in everywhere.
But the thing that I always fell back on was all of the things that I ended up, you know, it was like I would try to talk about sports with other kids or try it, but then I always just fell back on computers and D&D and stand up and comic, you know, and comedy and so it but I think there's a little something about me where you can sort of feel a little bit of my just that lingering sense of wanting to be liked. Do you know what I mean? Of just like wanting to fit
and wanting to be liked.
And I think that's what people read, you know, and are like, oh, that guy's kind of douche. I think they're feeling like I feel like that's some of my desperation coming through because I was never liked. Like it's funny that you and I were sort of ostracized for different reasons.
Yeah.
But the net result was the same, and seeing how we both kind of dealt with it was interesting. Where I just went hard at like trying to figure out, like I gotta figure out how to fucking. And you recede, like you disappeared for a while.
Yeah. Well, I had to go to Dagobah. don't go in the tree, man. It's bad shit. The tree. I my favorite piece in Almost Famous is when he's talking to Lester Bangs. And Lester Bangs goes, oh, no, they made you feel cool, and you are not cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I relate to that so much.
Can I be honest with you about something?
Have you not seen Almost Famous?
I've actually not seen Almost Famous.
Oh, can I recommend watching the director's cut version?
But it's crazy to me that I haven't seen that movie. I think it's one of those things that when it came out, I didn't make it to the theater for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after that, it was just people like, oh, yeah, of course, Almost Famous. And I think there was a period of time where I was convinced that I had seen Almost Famous.
Because it was so much a part of our culture.
Yeah, and now I've just realized I've actually seen it.
I will admit that until 5 nights ago, I had never seen 1 minute of Community.
Confessions.
I watched the pilot for Community, and it made me laugh so hard, and I loved it so much
that I
think I'm going to go and watch all of it.
Confession.
Is there a popular thing that you haven't seen that people would have expected you to
for
see?
For 99 cents a minute, you can listen to people that you know
about talking about this today. Apocalypse Now.
You never saw Apocalypse Now?
Really? Yeah. One of those things where I know everything about it, but I don't know how it happened. It's funny because Deanna.
Watch Apocalypse Now and then watch the stop motion A Pack of Gifts Now.
Yeah, yeah.
GIFs.
GIFs.
A pack of gifs now.
But it's funny because like Deanna and I just found this awesome video rental place in South Pasadena called Videotech. And it's like, you know, kind of like cinephile, one of those places where it's like kind of divvied up through director and actor and stuff like that. Like
they rent actual videotapes?
Well, no, it's a DVD place, but it's like really like well thought out. It's an amazing.
So it's like a curated kind of place.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Oh, but that sounds great.
It's awesome. It's because it has a ton, like, you know, it has a big underground like movie section.
Yeah.
It has like a good queer cinema section. It has like, you know, just like you can go and you're like, oh, I'll go to the Nick Cage section or I'll go to the Cassavetes section.
Do they have like a 70s exploitation?
They do.
Kind of,
yeah.
I love those
movies. So it's like
so
it's
much.
Really well curated, like real cool. You know, right when we walk in, they started watching World's End. like, you know, just and the guys were like quoting lines from it while watching it. But we Deanna knows so much more about that stuff. So when we were there, she's like, she made some reference to Night of the Hunter. And I was like, oh, I've never seen it. And she's like, never seen Night of the Hunter. And then she like said, like, that's where the love, hate on the hands come. And then she like went down all the things. And then like, I'm watching this movie and it's incredible.
And you're just realizing how influential it was like, in your life.
Yeah.
And you didn't realize it.
I'd never seen The Magnificent Seven. And I watched Magnificent Seven on Saturday night with both of my kids and Ryan's girlfriend, Claudette, came over. And I was like, they were like, what are you doing? And so Anne went to Palm Springs with Chobot and Hayslip and Jenna Bush and Ashley Escada and Michelle. I can't remember her last name.
Morrow.
So I met her. Michelle Morrow. Yeah, yeah. No, wait, I do know Michelle. Yeah, so she went with, they all went to Palm Springs for Chobot's birthday. And so I was like home alone for the weekend, and I was like, fucking dude movies, that's what's happening. So my son was like, what are you doing this weekend? And I said, I'm just watching, basically watching Westerns and 70s cop films. Come over if you want.
That's awesome.
And so we were watching Magnificent Seven, and Robert Mitchum, who's in Night of the Hunter, is such a different character in Magnificent Seven, but I imagine that he's the same character from Night of the Hunter, but in Magnificent Seven. And that's how, so that I, in my mind, I decided, like, you know, the timelines don't work out, you know, but I decided that this guy from Night of the Hunter becomes this guy in Magnificent Seven in a way to sort of like atone for the actions of Night of the Hunter. I would, if you had to choose between Apocalypse Now and Night of the Hunter, I would tell you to watch Night of the Hunter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's amazing.
But you still watch Apocalypse Now.
And if you do watch Apocalypse Now, watch the documentary that Coppola's wife made.
It's called Hearts of Darkness. Hearts of Darkness. It's a weird thing. There's just these gaps and, you know.
Gaps. Wait, never mind. No. That did not come out right at all. I was just doing the soft G.
If you
on
could
gap,
please, Katie, if you could just cut that into when we're talking
Katie,
about being
don't you dare!
Racist. I mean, it's really important that you cut that into when we're talking about Chris.
No. We could save this. Say it again.
Gaps.
No, say it again.
Again.
No, say
it.
I was going to say, you're going to say, I was going to, they're great.
Oh, okay.
Say it again.
No.
He almost did it. I saw the thinking happen. He's like, no. You're smarter than me. I said it.
Oh, you know what? I tried to tweet at Tom Hanks the other day. Yeah, he still hasn't responded. But
Taylor Swift hasn't responded, and I tweet to her six times a day.
I want to get his permission because I want to make a sequel to That Thing You Do about an ill-fated 80s reunion of the Wonders called That Thing You Did.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. It really needs to happen. I want to be the Marty DeBurgi in this.
It really needs to happen. That is a great idea.
Yeah, I shouldn't have set it out to where thousands of people.
What
if IGEA? If here, this is. I'm gonna pitch. Let me pitch this. All right, don't make the movie. Make the trailer for the movie, and we make it as a Nerdist film.
Yep.
Oh. We have the studio. We have the productions and all that. And I have the beard to be one of the guys who's really just let himself go.
Oh my God, that's such a great idea. We should do that.
But like, I'm sure that using the combined powers of ourselves and the people we know, we could even get somebody or some buddies.
I bet Ethan Embry would do it. And actually, he looks like a guy that went to war and got fucked up from it. Because if you see Ethan Embry now, he's like ripped and covered in tattoos.
I really think that, like, that's really funny. And now if we don't do it, somebody's going to do it.
I know.
So now we kind of have to do it.
Yeah.
I think we should just try to assemble all of the cast.
It'd be pretty great. You could play the Mario DeBurgi type. That would be great. Like you know, Rob Reiner and...
Yeah.
And it's like,
and Spinal Tap.
It's like you're the guy that's like the super fan and that you're just trying so hard to make a reunion work and none of them like each other. And like stuff flares up between like Johnny and Shades because of Faye. And
oh my God. Come on.
And also Steve Zahn's character, just obese.
Yeah.
Just like a huge fat guy.
And somebody refuses to show up, but their kid shows up to play the instrument.
That would work.
Right.
And the drummer. And the kid's
played by Jason Bonham.
Yeah.
Well, we have to wrap it up because I have to go to work.
You have to go make your television show at midnight.
I got
to
go make my program at midnight.
I'm coming to do that at midnight next month.
I know. You and Felicia and who was
I've heard different things. I was talking with Bart about it, and I was pushing for Grace, but I don't know if Grace is available. It might be Alan Tudyk.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Tudyk was great. And also, I just want to throw out, because I know they listen to the podcast, but a huge congratulations to Billy and Barry.
so much. That was one of the coolest things I've ever witnessed.
This con man panel was really fun because it was the first web series in Hall H. And it was Fillion and Tudyk, Alan Tudyk, who wrote and directed Con Man, and they raised $3 million,
$3.4 million
of the Indiegogo, and it looks fucking great. It looks so good.
Yeah.
And the effects were, and so there were just a lot of like really magical, fun moments in the panel. Because
and every single person on the stage was like, I can't believe I'm here. I don't know why I'm here. I don't deserve to be here with these people.
Because literally everyone's friends, and it's sort of like a greatest hits of fan favorites. And the series is full of those. And this guy Billy did
The visual effects.
He did the visual effects, and they look fucking great because the whole idea is that it's a Firefly type show that he is now doing the Comic-Con circuit off of.
Oh, wow.
And so they cut back and forth to the show.
Oh, that's so
and
fun.
And it looks fucking really great. Amazing.
And his boyfriend Barry did all the makeup.
Oh,
they
shit.
They have like a visual makeup effect studio.
So what Billy didn't know is that Barry wanted to propose to him during the panel. And so they at the end of the panel, we had gone through everyone. It's like, oh, we have, you know, like Barry has one more question. Well, you should talk to and so Barry like brings Billy out and in front of Hall H because now they can.
Oh,
ask him. And then because we had done the Stand By Me thing, the sound guy at Hall H jumped right on it. And as soon as Billy said yes, they started playing Stand By Me in Hall H.
Man, what a
it was one of the
moment.
Best fucking moments.
It was
moments.
Such a great moment. I was the distance of a table from them. And like, I'm trying really hard not to cry.
I imagine Felicia, everyone must have been falling.
Felicia is weeping. And the thing that's cool is Barry said we could get married in California, but now we can get married at home.
Oh, God,
I was just like, oh, my God,
this is amazing.
There's a picture somewhere where you're kind of in the background in between the two of them sitting up front, and you're making this face. Like this, like you're about to just like
ugly sobbing.
Yes,
that's really beautiful.
Yeah, so congratulations.
That was
to
great.
Billy and Barry
it was really cool to get to have a front row seat for that.
And if anything, you know, this thing that you want of going into a room and booking a job, it'll happen 100%. But you have to know how much of an example you are to people, especially now talking about anxiety and depression and the sort of mental struggles that we all have. Just how inspirational you are to people for just being you, and not only but also in the larger meta sense of not just telling people how to deal with stuff, but how being themselves is the right thing to do. Like being yourself is the right path. And seeing all of those friends up there in the con man panel and saying to people like, yeah, this could be you. You could be working a thing with a bunch of your friends and just because for the love of doing it. And that's the most important thing. Like success is, I think the definition of success for me has changed so dramatically. Where I used to think it was about accomplishments or how much you could do at once or, you know. But it really is. You ask yourself, am I doing what I like to do? Do I have to do anything I don't want to do? And if you don't really, you know, like the most success you can achieve is I don't have to do anything I don't want to do. Yeah. I just do stuff that makes me happy. And that's, you know, and I think
and that is so fucking hard to do.
That is so much more.
Creative,
that is so much more.
Industry.
You know, that is so much more valuable than, oh, some governing entertainment body said I was good enough to play this part. You know what I mean? Like, that's so not about who you are or you, and it doesn't, like, and you'll get it, and it'll sort of be like, oh, okay, oh, great, you know, and then you can check that box off, but then you'll go back to your life of being authentically one of the best people I know and inspiring people.
That's really sweet.
It's true.
Take a compliment, you fucking son of a...
Thanks for having me on,
I love
on the
you
show
to
again.
Death. I love you so much, and I'm so glad that... that we are still getting to do the silly things that we get to do.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this makes me the most frequent guest on Nerdist.
I think it might actually.
I think it
when
might.
When you count up, because you were on the Wilco episode and you were on a.
Yeah.
I mean, just Wilco. We got to sit in the Wiltern and watch Wilco basically play a private concert for us.
Nice.
I remember when you first told me about Wilco and what a big deal it was. And see,
boy, that ruined concerts for me. I'm like, nah, hang on. Do I get to
see. Let all these other assholes in?
Do I get to see this concert all by myself? Because if they're letting other people in, I don't have time for that.
There was that one moment at the Nerdist Geek and Sundry Smart Girls party where. You and I and Felicia had sort of found each other and all the mass of people. And we were standing there like, this is really fucking great. Like, we were looking around. We were at Comic-Con, our safe zone. The party was lousy with our friends. Like, people, like, littered with people that we love and looking around. It was like, this is what it's all about. This is what it's supposed to be about.
That party's why I had more fun at Comic-Con than I thought I would. Being able to stand at sort of the entrance to the party there and getting to see everyone I like. Come in, and even though it was just for like a few minutes of getting to say like, oh my God, I haven't seen D in fucking a year and a half.
Yeah.
And so just getting to see over and over and over again, wave after wave of people I love and people I care about all in one place. And I was like, you know, this makes coming to Comic-Con worth, and like it makes Comic-Con worth Comic-Con because like that got to happen. And that got to happen because of this thing we built. I mean, that's kind of incredible. And really where Geek & Sundry is right now, we're really fortunate that you were doing Nerdist the same time we were doing Geek & Sundry because we've clearly established that we can do this thing.
As a team.
Yeah.
Because we both have different, you know, it's like, I mean, I really do. I will readily admit, you know, if we're opposite sides of the coin, but I still feel like it's the same coin.
Yeah.
I feel like if anything, I might be slightly more commercial than you, which actually makes me less cool. Like, I think you're cool. I think you're so much cooler.
I'm not cool.
You are so much. And that's why you're cool.
I'm so not cool.
You are. You know why? Because I'll tell you exactly why you are, because cool isn't about like, hey, I got this shit figured out. It's being authentic to who you are. Being cool is being comfortable with your flaws. Being cool is just being yourself and going, hey, yeah, I'm imperfect and this is who I am and that's fucking deal. That's it, you know? Yeah. Like, that's cool.
And cigarettes and sunglasses.
I think we could. I think. Oh, and Camaros. Yeah.
And Camaras.
Yeah.
Camaros and Camaras.
I think we can both agree that Jonah's cooler than we are.
I don't know if we can absolutely agree on that.
I don't know. If we went to Amoeba right now.
He's wearing red socks.
There were cool people around.
They do match your microphone.
I've got, of course, fucking aliens and robots on my socks. And you're not wearing socks?
Oh. I'm wearing half socks because I went to the exercise facility.
Oh, I like exercise.
But if we did go to Amoeba right now, I would just say hi to all the people I used to work with there.
Yeah. And you'd be cool.
No one's cool there.
Oh. Hey, guys, it's your favorite buddy, Jonah. Yeah. Please, we're working.
Last time I was there, I was talking to the guy I worked with at both Amoeba and Arclight, and he was like, you still doing the comedy thing? And I had to like stifle a bunch of like pride, which I rarely ever have. And I was like, yeah, still tinkering away.
Doing my best.
Yeah. TV show now.
Yeah. But that's like, you can't say that. Well, I got the TV show now, so yeah, it's doing okay. I tried my best not to sound like a dick.
Well, that's it. Oh, did you want to promote something while you were here?
When's this going to be on the internet?
Coming up tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah. This is a fast turnaround.
You've got your work cut out for you. I'm at Gen Con this weekend.
Gen Con.
In Indianapolis. And we have a panel for my show Titan's Grave on Saturday morning. That I'm super excited about.
Titans Drake.
Titans Drake is the sequel. No, it's Gen Con.
Gen Con?
Nope, Gen Con. It's Gen Con.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's Gen Con.
I know you're.
And it's, yeah. I mean, this is one that you're going to lose legitimately, not just because I wear you down. I mean, you're going to lose this one on the facts, just not on my persistence.
You Gen Xers.
Nope, it's Gen Xers. Yep, it's true. Yeah, it's like that show Generator Rex.
I don't.
So we're doing that, and then Titan's Grave. We're in the last three episodes today, which is yesterday when you're listening to this. Episode 8 came out. Next week is episode 9, and then the following week is our extra long season finale.
Fantastic.
And I have that weird mixed feeling where I'm so proud and so excited of having finished a thing, and so sad that it's over, and so terrified about. trying to do more of it maybe in the future.
Hey, yeah. Man, but it's on right now, so, you know, yeah. Enjoy
so
your burrito.
So that's
enjoy your Radio Free Burrito.
I will enjoy it. And I'm making Radio Free Burritos all the time now.
Good.
I'm making them almost every day. I think that's it. I don't really have anything else exciting happening.
Just be careful that you don't cling on to your anxiety as a safety blanket. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And believe me, I don't.
I mean,
I know that.
You don't need it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I understand that. What I've gotten really good at recently is recognizing useful, helpful anxiety that focuses me for work and the terrible, crippling kind that's just me worrying about shit that I can't
do anything
about.
Well, sometimes it's easy to drift a little bit into a little bit of OCD with your anxiety where it's like, oh, this is a pattern that I have to...
Yeah,
I have to be anxious
it's not that at all. It's actually a thing that I have to take medication for so that I can exist when it gets real bad.
Yeah.
I'm just like, all right, it's time for you to settle the fuck down now, anxiety.
Yeah.
But thank you for that. That is a thing that I actually point out to people a lot. Like, it's very easy to think like it's part of my process and it just doesn't have to be.
No.
Yeah. And I'm taking all of August off just to be a writer and do At Midnight. At Midnight is my only like gig in
August. Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm really excited.
I'm so excited to have you on in August to At Midnight.
Did you say At Midnight?
McNugget.
At McNugget?
At Midnight.
Last night, Dron Oliver put up a picture of McNuggets on the TV. And he called them tiny chicken mistakes.
God damn it.
Tiny. And Ann was like, did he just say tiny chicken mistakes?
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Can I say the words? I want to say
it. I feel like you have to.
I want to say it. Enjoy your burrito.
Yay!
I can clap longer than you. Are you trying to clap longer than me?
Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
Bitch.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Girls Fight Back is the world-renowned personal safety and empowerment-based self-defense company that teaches women and people of all gender identities how to live confidently while being their own best protector. As a leading voice on violence prevention and empowerment for over 20 years, Girls Fight Back has trained over 1 million people around the world since 2001.
Their engaging workshops create a safe environment for groups to learn evidence-backed, life-saving skills, emphasizing that self-defense education is about more than just physical resistance. Girls Fight Back, led by CEO Nicole Snell, provides audiences with a range of applicable safety strategies that can be used in any setting so that you can lead a badass life.
To learn more about Girls Fight Back and to bring their award-winning trainings and seminars to your community, visit girlsfightback.com. That's girlsfightback.com.